Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. And for all you One Final Scare listeners, Audible's offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the chance to check out their service. I've used Audible for about 2 years now for all my audiobook needs, and I'm currently listening to Mark Manson's The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck, a counterintuitive approach to living a good life. It's a modern-day self-help book that tells us how to stop trying to be so positive all the time so that we can truly become better, happier people. Check it out, or you can download any other audiobook of your choice. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/onefinalscare. Again, that's audibletrial.com/onefinalscare for your free audiobook. Hello!
Hey!
What's up?
What's going on?
Welcome.
Episode 4.
Episode 4 of One Final Scare.
One Final Scare.
Just one. Just one.
Just
more.
Just one.
Just one. Or like many more. Yeah. As long as as many scares as we want to talk about. Yeah. But just one each time.
Yeah.
If this is your first time tuning in, go back and listen from the beginning. But this is our fourth installment of Minky and Tracy's horror movie retelling / review podcast, where we literally retell an entire movie.
I am going to be drinking beer this time.
And I have my wine this time.
So this is going to be the most entertaining episode out of all of them.
We just have to enunciate.
No, I have to.
And stay awake.
You're fine.
No, I'm getting sleepy. I've not been sleeping super well recently.
So, to start, did anything scary happen to you, Tracy, this past week?
Are you asking me this because I asked you last time?
Yeah.
Oh.
Of course.
How was that? How is your vertigo, by the way?
Oh. It's still around.
It's still around?
Still. It hasn't left.
Haunting you?
It's haunting me.
It's like if
I shake my head pretty quickly, like I get a little lightheaded.
What happens if you, like, bend over right now?
I might pass out.
Uh-oh. Let's not do that.
Go to bed.
Has anything scary happened to me recently?
Yeah. Anything Jeff do? Leaving the bathroom that might have scared you?
I mean, that's always. Let's see. Well, I went and got some vaccinations today in prep for my trip to South Africa. And talking to somebody that works for Passport Health is a little scary.
You're saying going to South Africa.
I am.
Africa,
I'm going to
scary.
South
Africa.
No.
Yes.
No, no. That's not what I'm saying. Don't mince my words. I'm saying that when you go and you speak with somebody at one of these passport health places, I've never done this before. So I showed up.
What, getting a passport?
No, no. Okay. So it's the company's called Passport Health. And it's essentially a clinic that you can go to instead of going to your primary care physician. And they have like every vaccination, whereas a lot of times your primary care doctor doesn't carry them all. And you tell them ahead of time where you're traveling to. And I had no idea. I showed up and they had an entire folder printed out for me with my name, where I was traveling, the temperatures it was going to be there while I was going to be there. And it was pages upon pages upon pages of shit I can get while I'm there. And then the vaccinations that I should get before going. And so, you know, a lot of them are like foodborne, waterborne illnesses. Of course, mosquitoes and malaria is a really big deal. She was telling me how measles is, I mean, we know, we've been hearing about it. Measles is kind of like a worldwide issue again. And so pretty much, I could die. That's kind of scary, but.
Because you're American born. Immune system is pretty weak.
Yeah.
Can't handle.
Well, I don't know if it's weak. I mean,
well,
I never really get sick here, but when you go to another country, you ain't prepared for that shit. And then she was like, oh, rabies is really bad. Shit. And I'm like, I'm not really planning on touching, you know, animals while I'm there. And she's like, it doesn't matter. Like, even a cow, you can get the saliva and you can get rabies. It's really terrible. I'm like, oh, my God.
Adventure.
Yeah.
Adventure.
It's going to be fun, though.
Yeah.
Strictly pleasure. So I'm just going to try
So you're saying that we only have about 10 episodes.
We might.
Because you don't make it back.
I leave mid-February, so we got a couple more episodes
six episodes
for people to enjoy.
And then I have to get a new co-host.
That's fucked up. Who would you pick, though?
I have peeps.
You have peeps?
Yeah.
Okay.
They're lined up. I'm sorry. Is it rubbing against it?
Yeah. It rubs its lotion on its skin. All right. Well, don't replace me. Let's just agree that if I die while I'm on travel, you either have to start a new podcast or you just like stop doing podcasts.
Just stop doing it.
This was a failed effort.
I have to do. I have to do like at least one episode where I mourn your death.
Yes.
Like the last episode.
Please do that.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm an only child.
Yeah.
I definitely need, I need that. Like as I go on to the other side, I need to look down.
One final scare, one final episode.
Yes. And I'll come back.
One final.
And for death. One final scare, Tracy will do it. Just for this podcast. For you 10 listeners.
10? Yeah.
I hope.
<It's> generous. Okay.
Speaking of which, no.
What are you going to ask me?
No, not you. I was going to ask the listeners, have you written us lately? Have you emailed us to tell us your first horror experience?
Are you expecting them to respond?
Yeah, I do.
Like right now?
Tell me right now. Fucking answer me now. If you've been listening, we asked you guys to write in your first time with horror movie, how it made you feel, what happened, and we read our first listener mail last episode. We'll read one at the end of every episode, so please email us at onefinalscare@gmail.com and check us out on Facebook and Instagram at onefinalscare.
That's right.
So do that.
We have multiple accounts.
We do.
And we're having difficult.
Are we?
Managing them.
We're figuring it out. We are savvy people.
We're juggling them.
Okay.
All.
We are savvy. We know how to run multiple accounts and share admin rights.
Yeah. We're going to have a website up soon as well.
Posting some photos, mainly pictures of me because Minky's a good photo taker.
What? Oh.
Like you're good at taking photos of me, but I need to take more photos of you. It's a one-sided relationship.
Yeah, it is. That's okay. It's okay.
So,
yeah. Hey, so what did we watch tonight?
What did we watch tonight together? We watched another movie together this time, which was fun.
Yeah.
We watched, if you listened to our last episode, we were like, okay, fuck this.
Boo.
This was, we need a redeeming movie. So you picked Autopsy of Jane Doe because you heard it was pretty good from this year.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
And then I think... I have to agree, right?
That do I?
Yeah.
Are you just going to make me agree with you?
Yeah. That it was a success.
You know, it
full
was a
pick.
It was different. It was new. It was interesting. It was
new.
Like I've not seen this story entirely before.
In recent memory, okay.
In recent memory or ever memory. you do have to admit, you know, before we get into it, you do have to admit, I kind of guessed.
My God.
Sorry, just really? Give me the credit. You know, I like it. I did.
Okay.
I kind of guessed it at the beginning, but we'll get to that.
But it was still enjoyable.
It was.
Although she said, I knew it. I knew it.
Like I 10 knew times. It. I knew it so much, told you.
So what was the name of the movie?
Well, I already said that shit.
You didn't.
I did too. I said Autopsy. I said you picked Autopsy of Jane Doe from this year.
Okay.
Oh, you are drunk.
I'm getting there.
So it did come out this year. When did it come out? Because I had not heard. I was obviously I've been living
like
in
3 weeks ago.
Okay, so we're seeing something newer, and you said it had been getting good reviews, and what did it get on Rotten Tomatoes? Something pretty high, right?
Like, yeah, above 70. That's for a horror film.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We got some grade A actors in it.
Brian Cox.
Yeah, love him. He's in everything.
Emile Hirsch.
Yeah.
And those are the two.
Those are the two people we know, and those are the two.
And a handful of indie. There is a Game of Thrones actor who's the cop, sheriff.
Mm.
I can't
which I don't see. I don't watch Game of Thrones. So
I know.
Sorry.
I know. Everyone's like,
I know. But just so you know, when I do take my 25-hour trip to South Africa.
You're not going to watch.
No, I think I might. I need something so that I don't go crazy.
Okay.
So I might. But anyway. All right. So list of top characters. What's our main cast before we get into it so people know who we're talking about?
Tommy.
Tommy Tilden.
Who's
Brian Cox. Hirsch.
Yeah, Brian Cox, the father.
Mm-hmm.
And this and son, Austin.
Austin.
Yeah.
And we've got Sheriff Sheldon.
You would think the name would be flipped, right? The Tommy is like you know, Thomas. Call him Thomas.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a kid's name. You don't call an old man.
My
like
dad was Brian Thomas, Cox. And people called him Tommy. Yeah. Sometimes he'd be like Tom. But yeah.
Okay, Tom.
Yeah.
Tommy.
Tommy. Yeah.
Right?
Austin. Yeah. Austin's a newer name, right?
Austin's girlfriend, Emma.
Is that her name?
Yeah.
I think I missed that the whole time. But and then we've got Jane Doe. So those are the main ones. And so shall we get into it? Shall we begin the retelling?
Yeah. So I got interested or drawn into, you know, recommending this movie from seeing a trailer. And the trailer, it seemed out of the ordinary, right? For me, just reading the title itself, Autopsy of Jane Doe, I just thought, you know, I didn't think it was it'd be you're so what's the word I'm looking for?
I have no idea.
I know you're like middle of the road, you know, ghost story or whatever, but watching the trailer, mm-hmm. and I won't give it up, but like the little bell scene and then the hallway scene with the smoke,
mm-hmm.
That gave us this like supernatural element.
Totally.
Yeah. That was like, okay, this is different than what I was expecting in my head. And I was like, I'm in.
So you showed me the trailer and you were like, just watch this. Cause I was like, is this for real going to be a good movie this time? And the trailer, you're right. It was like, okay, father, son, autopsy, dad, what's going on?
Yeah.
Creepy crawly, like what's happening, and all fades to black.
And there was that, and there's that element of mystery, like figuring out like what's going on with Jane Doe.
Mm-hmm. Like, is she causing the,
like, what is, yeah, all this little like hidden things, and mm-hmm. like she was almost like a puzzle piece they had to put together.
Mm-hmm. And you're still talking strictly about the trailer, like what you got from that.
Yeah, from the trailer. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So we watched it together, and I took notes again this time. Furious notes.
I was like, writing a book over here? Dear Diary.
Well, when we're drinking, I'm afraid I'm just going to like glaze over and be like, wait, what did we watch? Oh, and just then I'll like go back to being like, what happened? Yeah. Yeah. You were struggling.
I'm gonna forget,
it's not going to go.
Yeah, I'm going to forget. Forget words.
It's all right, you know? So we're in front of a house, and the subtitle kind of says Grantham, Virginia, which we should have looked that up. Is that a real friggin' place, or is that a made up town in Virginia? We should know. We're literally in Virginia right at this moment.
I mean, it's probably a real place, right?
I don't
why
know.
Why make up they drop VCU.
They do.
Yeah. So
which Mickey just felt so proud.
Now it's haunted.
All right. So Grantham, Virginia, that's where we're at. That's where the story begins. And what I've written down, dead family. So that's where it starts. We've got a couple cops taking photos of a crime scene. And we see like what seems to be a husband.
It's a real place.
Yeah. Oh, it is a real place. All right. Real place. Grantham, Virginia. Shoot. Interesting. All right. So anyway, we've got a bunch of dead people in a house, and I'm not going to really kind of go into it because I don't think it matters much, and we never really revisit those dead family members again. But the one interesting detail is one of the cops says, I just don't know. It doesn't seem like anybody was trying to break in. Rather, it looks like everybody was trying to get out, right? So then they go down to the crawl space.
We're live on Facebook.
Wow, hey, what's up? So let's see. We go down to the crawl space with the cops, and there's a dead body down there too. And they're like, who is this, though? This isn't a family member, and she's totally nude. She's mostly buried under. You are so distracting right now.
Okay, I'll turn it off.
Okay, thanks. All right, so we're back to it. And one, two, three, go. Crawl space, dead girl. And the cops are like, she doesn't belong with the family. Who is this? And they're like, we have no idea. She's perfectly pale and no blood, no nothing. She's just, you know, naked and in dirt. And so the, what? 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 Is that not a
no, it just fair sounds like sounds like an album. Like, naked and in dirt. Like a heavy metal album.
Yeah. So anyway, the cops then the scene just cuts. So it's like super quick. Dead family, dead girl in the crawl space.
Okay, so family, dead girl buried. And the big thing, right, mm-hmm. they say before he gets cut.
Are you going to say that it doesn't look like anybody was trying to get in?
Yeah.
I already said that. Pay attention.
Did you really?
Yes. All right. Oh my God. Okay, so next episode, I'll have a new co-host.
Shut up.
We'll be taking emails if you'd like to join me.
All I was a little distracted doing Facebook Live.
To take pictures.
No, it was a Facebook Live thing.
Oh, okay. Yeah, good. Well, we need to be there for our fans.
Broadcasting live the first time.
Nobody follows us yet. All right. Can we get back to this?
Yeah.
Jesus. All right. So it's a really quick beginning before then we're in. We are in the morgue crematorium, and we know it is because we see the front of it with a sign, and then we see
camera pans
to the inside where we see family photos of like the families over the years standing in front of the house,
yeah.
Right? And it says established 1919, so this has been going on for a long time. We're introduced quickly to the father and son, literally moments
Tommy and Austin,
but not before the movie is really interesting at this point to me, where the camera is introducing you to the morgue and the crematorium by yourself, by itself. And I said to you, it feels like they're introducing us to a character, like this whole, we went up and down every hallway. It was beautifully shot. It was a lot of cool scenes. I think you were admiring how nice some of the house was.
Yeah.
And the colors were good.
It was warm downstairs, colors, because of the wood.
Mm-hmm.
And then outside was bluish cold.
Right.
Remember? And upstairs.
Yeah.
The kitchen was, so that balance was interesting.
Mm-hmm. And I immediately, if it's worth noting at all, I felt like the house... I think I said something like, this feels like The Shining because it's like they're introducing a house in some way. And it took a while. And then all of a sudden, finally, we see the father and son in the autopsy room, like the actual room where they're about to...
They're just finishing up.
The crusty guy.
Yeah.
So we've got a mid-autopsy of a guy that's been burned to a crispy chip.
I mean, this guy was head to... He looked like a barbecue chicken.
And at this point, we were eating Thai food, and Minky almost wasn't able to eat. I didn't know you were squeamish like that.
No, I just said at times, you know, when you like...
When you're eating something that looks
like it's on your skin, you're like, yeah, you just groan.
Yeah.
I mean, I ate it. I wasn't like, oh, no, my God.
Like, it's like, like I said, the rice and the noodles and what's it called?
Maggots and Lost Boys.
Lost Boys. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Great scene. So we can tell that this is a father who has been doing this his whole life, and he's trying really hard to teach his son, you know. You can tell he's quizzing him. The son's trying to make guesses as to what happened to this guy.
And son is willing, by the way. It's not your typical, like, oh, dad, I don't want to do this.
Right.
This is not my life. You
right.
Know? Yeah.
He's really taking, you know, stabs at what happened to this guy. And he's like, the dad's encouraging him. Tommy's like encouraging Austin to really dig deeper and think about it a little bit harder. On the outside,
but
this guy.
But all factual stuff.
All factual stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say, like, he's super crusty. And so Austin says something like, well, he was found in the house burned alive, I guess, you know, whatever happened. And he goes, son, like, peel back the occipital, you know, whatever.
Lobe. Yeah.
And so behind there, it's a cracked skull. And so he's like, what do you think happened? And I think,
he bludgeoned to death.
Before. Well,
that's what he thought.
He
said that.
Yeah.
He was bludgeoned.
Did he?
He said his socket was cracked.
Mm-hmm. But I think he said he fell like inside Oh, that's right. Because he was like, why would a guy in a burning house be 3 feet away from the door and not get out?
Yeah.
And it's because he had fallen to his death or something.
Because he goes, did someone do this?
Right.
And he was like, no, he fell. He probably,
right.
He
fell. Yeah. So we know that they're in the business of figuring out like difficult to solve murders or deaths. And the movie's like really rapid fire at this point. In the early
pacing.
The pacing is very fast. It's good. That happens, and immediately like we meet the family cat. The dad walks away for a moment, and the cat comes out of one of the like the air ducts and just drops a dead rat. Like, here you go, just giving you this. And you know, the son is like, oh god, like he got another rat, dad, and drops it in the trash can. And then the son hears a noise. And he starts searching through the house and while the dad like walks outside to go smoke a cigarette. And the son's hearing a noise and kind of walking around the house. And he's hearing things and he's hearing creaks and he's like checking stuff out. And all of a sudden his girlfriend scares him. So Emma jumps, you know, makes him have like startles him. And immediately she's like, okay, you've seen where I work. I work in a bookstore. And I was like, yeah, girl, because I used to work in a bookstore. And then she was like, so let me see where you work. And what, did you not know that? Oh.
You just slid that in look. There. I was like,
what? Well, it's whatever. So she's like, I want to see where you work. And he's like, you really shouldn't see this stuff. Like, it's not for the faint of heart. And she's like, no, I really want to see a dead body. And so she walks back into the autopsy room, and it's just the two of them. And on the wall of the drawers, there's like, what's in there?
There's three at the top, three on the bottom.
Yeah.
And three on the bottom has cards in the little slot.
Because there's bodies in there.
Yeah, because there's bodies in there.
And so she goes, are these full? And he said, there's three of them. And she's like, let me see one. And he goes, no, it's not cool to do that. And like, my dad would be against it. And all of a sudden the dad goes.
Appears.
Well, you hear him say, like, am I against it? You know, or something.
Try me.
Right. And he's like leaning up against the wall, like, mm-hmm. Like, why don't you go ahead and look at it? It's just weird. Yeah. And so it's like, you know, he's kind of tempting her and she's into it. And the boyfriend's a little weird, or Austin's a little like weird about it.
Yeah.
And so he's like, fine, pick one. So she's like, this one.
The one in the middle. She picks the one in the middle.
So they open it up.
No. And then he goes, picks and opens the one on the left.
Oh, right. Right, mm-hmm. Right.
And opens that one up. And there's an old lady. Her eyes are sewn shut.
And
her mouth are sewn shut.
And then, it said she died of mesothelioma.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then Emma says, why didn't you open up the one that I pointed to?
Yeah. Like, I want to see this one. Yeah, and the dad is like, he's kind of into it.
He starts laughing.
He's kind of like like drinking his coffee and you know, whatever. And he's like, open it up for her, son, you know?
Yeah.
And so he opens it up and it's covered in a sheet, whereas the other one was not.
It was. They were both covered in a sheet.
Oh,
but
you're right.
Face was right. Covered.
So the sheet on the head part was like covered. Dented in completely.
But it was like, it was falling through the face because it didn't have one.
And she goes, and there's like blood all over it.
Yeah.
And she's like, what happened to this person?
Shotgun to the face.
And she's like, and she starts to peel it back and he goes, you don't want to see that. And she's like, I want to see the face. And the dad says something like, there's not much of it left.
Yeah.
And she said, what happened? It was shot to the face, point blank. And it was like, again, we learned that this was another body that on the outside, it seems as if, you know, like either committed suicide by shooting himself in the face. But he says the body, but the body had, and I didn't know the name of it, but like strychnine or something like that. And he said, we found that in the system. So therefore, like this guy had been poisoned. And then the person, like, I think the murderer was trying to hide it, I think, I'm pretty sure.
No, he said by the angle of the thing was self.
I don't know. Maybe I misinterpreted it, but he said by this something in the system, whatever. The whole point is that they're figuring shit out. Like, he's smart. He's like.
Right. So there was an interesting dynamics of the father and the son.
Yeah.
That we should probably talk about because it happens at the beginning and throughout the movie where the father, he's very a traditionalist. He actually says that, right? And he's like, as a coroner, they're like only, job is to find out how they died,
mm-hmm.
right? But the son is interesting. definitely wants to know why as well. Mm-hmm. And father keeps going, we're not here to learn why, right? Mm-hmm. It's we're here to learn. But that's, and that obviously in the, later in the movie.
Right.
That sort of thinking helps him figure out.
Yeah, you're right. Emma shows up because she and Austin are about to leave for a date, and they start walking out. As they're about to get on this old creaky elevator with like those two levels where, or the two layers where it's like the doors open and then it's like the iron kind of gate opens or whatever it is. As they're about to get on the elevator to leave, Sheriff Sheldon is coming off of the elevator and he's pretty shaken up. And Austin
Austin goes, I've never seen him like that before.
Yeah, he's like, I've never seen him like that. And he's like, Sheriff Sheldon, what's up? And he's like, I have this body and I need a COD by end of day. Like COD by EOD. And Austin and Emma get in the elevator. She's kind of like, I ain't having it. Like, come on, get your ass out of here. You got a date to take me on. And they're about to like walk out of the house and we're in the upstairs. You
can clearly tell that he wants to
stay.
Yeah.
And there ensues a conversation between the two of them about, come on, Austin, you got to live your life. Like you're going to be going to school. Like, do you know dad yet you're going away?
I didn't like that scene. Right. She was a little pushy.
I don't know. Though.
Right. A little bitchy.
I don't think
right?
so. I think
she wasn't very supportive.
I think you're reading into that a little much.
Yeah. Hey, if you can read into the fact that they were introducing the house as a character.
Come on, that's for real though. Have you ever seen The Shining?
But she was like, what is he going to do after you leave? Like,
right.
You know, and she was very pushy and she was like,
and he
very
goes,
selfish.
I don't know though. I
she
mean,
came up, like, she, he clearly wanted to stay.
I don't
stay
think it was that mean. I think like he was on his way out with her. They had made plans. Like they literally had plans to go see a movie or something. And then it was like, he just couldn't. And then she said, she goes, you're leaving in like however many months. And then his look made her realize that he's not told his dad yet he's leaving. And then she says,
yeah.
Come on, Austin, it's been 2 years. So now we realize that, and I think we all just put it together pretty quickly, that the wife
passed away.
Or, you know, Austin's mother passed away 2 years ago. And which is the case. But, you know, and she's like, it's been 2 years now. And he's like, I know, but... he makes some weird comment, I forget, but it was something like, you know, I don't know, like I want to leave, but my dad needs help. I think that's what it was. And so, you know, and I get it. But I don't know if it was bitchy or crass. I mean, I just think like she was trying to get him to do his thing and he clearly couldn't. And so he goes, look, babe, you just go leave, come back in a couple of hours. I'm going to go help him with this. This is a pretty major thing. I can just tell. So she's like, okay, fine.
11 o'clock.
Yep. So he says, come back around 11 o'clock. We'll go see the night show, the late show. So she leaves and they kiss. They said The Strand.
At 11 o'clock.
There's late movies, right? In Grantham, Virginia, though. I don't know. That sounds like it's tucked away somewhere late night movies, but who knows?
Like minor details.
Yep. So let's see. So she leaves and Austin comes back downstairs and he comes into the room and the cat is growling. There's a cat. The family cat is sitting at the door when he walks past and it's just growling at the Jane Doe's body. Okay.
Yeah.
I should have said that. Did we say that? That the body was the Jane Doe body from the crawl space from the first house. Did we say that? You guys got it. you're smart people.
Yeah.
So the son and dad are here together. Sheriff Sheldon's gone. And they immediately start the autopsy, which I kept noting in my head that a large part of the movie was the autopsy, which I kind of liked.
Figuring things out.
I wonder how long that actually lasted because I kind of like what we just went through was only a few minutes of the first few minutes of the movie.
The autopsy was probably like one third of the movie.
Right. Yeah. So it was rightly named.
But it was what's interesting about it was, you know, like her body was sort of this like mystery puzzle that they were trying to solve.
Well, every autopsy is really.
But this okay, one good point.
Really is.
But you know, it's, yeah, sure, but it, this was different, right? Than your regular autopsy.
Well, let's get into why it was different, shall we? They start talking immediately, and they're like, she's in her 20s. The son goes, she's in her 20s. And the dad's like, appears to be.
Yeah, mid to late 20s.
Again, like the very first sentence out of the son's mouth, the dad corrects him. And then opens up her eyelids, first thing he does. And this is all Austin doing this, right? And the dad's kind of watching.
Wait, no. You missed the fingernails and stuff, didn't you?
I wrote it after that. Okay. But so like he opens up her eyelids and he's like, oh, her eyes are gray. And the dad's like, that's a little odd. And that is the
very, very first.
It's like one of the very first things.
Yeah, that's odd.
And he goes, wow, that's very weird because that's usually a sign of a body that's been dead for days. But, and then he starts grabbing her arms and lifting them up.
It bends.
And he says, there's no lividity, which I know what that means. That means there's no like bruising, if you will, underneath. It's like whatever side the body's laying on after a certain amount of hours.
Mortis.
Well, yeah, and he said rigor mortis hadn't set in, which is odd. He said there's like no fluids coming out of any of the orifices. The ears are totally clean. And then that's when they find the peat under all of her nails, her toenails and her fingernails. Yeah. And peat, the reason why I know peat is because we're scotch drinkers in my house and I don't do very peaty scotches. And so I know that, you know, in those parts where scotch is made, I think peat is part of the soil in those areas. And so that was all my knowledge. But they started to define it a little bit more that peat's usually found in nurseries and things like that. It's kind of – it's a type of soil.
Your knowledge doesn't go beyond that?
Well, and about peat? Yeah. Like I just do it about scotch.
That's all my knowledge.
Oh. That's all my knowledge about peat. And so he – you know, he basically makes a point. The dad Tommy makes a point to say, you only find this up north.
Why would it be under her fingernails?
Why is it
and
under her
toenails?
In Grantham, Virginia.
Yeah.
And so they're like, okay, let's keep moving. So they open her mouth. And this is kind of the first startle moment for them. And I say startle because the dad was like, ew, oh, like I wasn't expecting that. Her tongue was gone.
Oh, right.
And he said, did he bite it off, Dad? Did she bite it off, Dad?
She could have bitten it off.
And he goes, no, not because the lacerations show that this was definitely like cut off.
And then the wrists and then the ankle.
Yep. So then the wrists and ankles, he was feeling them. And it was like you could just feel and hear bones just mushing around.
Moving around, yeah.
And and then all of a sudden, the son is about to take some Polaroids. And we start seeing a little Miss Jane Doe's nostrils start bumping around.
Before that, he goes, could she be, father says, I've seen this before in sex traffic victims.
Mm-hmm. And he starts drawing on the chalkboard.
Where they
bound
by the arms. And they cut the tongues off so they don't make a lot of noise. Mm-hmm. And he was like, she could be
sex trafficked. Yeah.
A victim.
Mm-hmm. You're right. And so then while he's talking about this and drawing on the chalkboard, Austin sees this fly crawling out of her nose. That's why it was bumping around and blood starts coming out of it, which is pretty gross. And then they look a little bit deeper past the tongue and a molar is missing. So one of her teeth is missing. And then the dad comes over to inspect. And when Tommy, the dad, reaches into the mouth with tweezers or what have you, he finds like a little piece of string and he pulls it up and out. It's a whole long piece of string. And they're like, oh, what the heck is this? So then it's
bag
time.
It. He says, Austin, bag it.
Mm-hmm. And then it's time to check the lady bits, which is an unfortunate finding that there's lacerations in her vagina.
Yep.
And he gives a bloody swab to the son. And the son, you know, I noticed that, like, this all felt, this is a horrible situation, you know, and it's like just a horrible thing to think about. And this body and, like, what has happened to this young girl. And she's just laying there kind of staring at you the whole time that this is happening, nude. And she's so, vulnerable. Thank you. And but the way that they're handling her is definitely with care and with, you know, I don't know, like it doesn't feel gross. I mean, they're taking care of her and it is very scientific, and you can just tell in Austin's face that he, like, it is sad. It's sad to him.
Sad.
Yeah.
So one thing I like about the chemistry between the father and the son, in movies like this, usually like one, like the son would, you know, be the one who, like, oh my God, I'm torn up about this, or she could be this, and, you know, speculated what, mm-hmm. what it could be, what could happen to her. Mm-hmm. And Brian Cox, while he was, you know, sort of like, we're not here to be why, to know why, but to know how, mm-hmm. but he was never like, you know, like a skeptic, or like he was open-minded of certain things, you know, and throughout the movie as well. Mm-hmm. Like the son didn't play one character, and they weren't like black
and white.
They
were a team.
Yeah.
They were a team.
And yeah.
I mean, dad has knowledge, son doesn't, but both are a team.
Do you know what I'm trying to say? Does that make sense?
I think so.
It wasn't like a skeptic and a believer,
right?
In one room. They were sort of both a team, and it was refreshing to see, because usually it's like when there's two players like that.
When you're talking about being skeptic and believer, you're talking about what we find out later.
No, I just meant in general, like in any context of like,
okay.
seeing like movies like that.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, I'd say that's right. Mm-hmm. And so at this point in time, it's weird. It's like, okay, we're finding all these weird things, all these little pieces of a puzzle, and we start hearing storms up above. And of course, like I said, I don't know if I said it actually, but we're kind of at the very bottom most level of this house, okay? And so there's also an old radio playing throughout this whole time. I think when they first started the autopsy, it was kind of like, you know,
sunshine.
Yeah, put on the music, son. Like, let's get this thing going. You know, we're not going to leave here until we figure this out. So all of a sudden, the radio starts getting static as soon as we start hearing the thunder and stuff. Yeah. Changing stations. You hear screaming. I don't know.
At one point.
Do you remember that? Yeah. And you start hearing.
What's the name of that song?
Well, first you just hear screaming and you're like, what the fuck is that? And they both turn and look at it, and it's very staticky. And then it flips again to this song that comes up throughout the movie. No. I'm actually forgetting the stupid name right now. Open Up Your Heart. Open Up Your Heart, which is pretty.
The lyrics are pretty.
I think the name is also called Open Up Your Heart. Yeah. And so it's playing, and it's kind of like how that Tiny Tim song is in, what's the movie with the people that did The Conjuring and all that? Why am I blanking out right now on everything? Anyway, like creepy old songs, like it always fucking works for me. It's like, oh, just insert any kind of creepy old song, and it makes everything more creepy to me. So all of a sudden it changes back to the regular radio, and they're like, oh, okay, let's keep going on about our business. And I'm like, okay, y'all just heard screaming. A creepy song, and now you're hearing regular songs again.
What are they supposed to do? They have a job to do.
I mean, I'm pretty sure I'd be like talking about it. Okay, I'm just saying.
Well, it's not real life. It's movie.
Okay. And they're like, all right, let's just keep going. So that's when the son, Austin's like, okay, next thing, I'm doing a body examination, and the waist seems to be way too small for her frame. And I think Tommy goes, I've seen this too. It can be when women wear corsets which would match kind of the story path that he's thinking might have happened to this girl too. Yeah. They start to
now we go inside. Right?
They go inside, so we make the V incision. Shape in the chest, and we peel back, and they're a little confused because
bleeding.
Oh yeah, it starts bleeding like crazy.
Yeah.
And the son goes, "That's not supposed to happen," and Tommy goes, I've seen this happen, but only with like fresh corpses. Yeah. This is kind of so nuts. So it kind of stops, kind of tapers off.
Austin takes a vial and takes a sample of the blood.
Uh-huh. Puts it in the fridge.
Puts it in the fridge.
Marks it Jane Doe.
For the lab, yeah.
And so as Tommy's like looking at the skin now, he's just peeling it back. He's like, weird. There's all this very dark matter kind of within the skin, and the sun, and Austin's like, is that melanoma? And he goes, I don't know how that could even be possible. And then when he peels it back more, lungs are completely black, and he goes, oh, maybe she smoked cigarettes.
He also cuts the ribcage first to see the lungs,
right? Yeah,
well, that's important.
Okay.
That's important.
Snap You're right. So the lungs are totally black, and Austin's like, she must have been a smoker. And he goes, son, she could have smoked 20 cigarettes a day for 30 years, and her lungs would never have looked like this. The only way lungs can look like this is if you were burned alive.
Yep.
But she's got no burn marks anywhere on her body, so this makes no sense to me. So the puzzle is just getting more and more complex.
And then she has lacerations in the organs as well, scar tissue.
And I think what he said, I wrote this down. He said, son, this is like finding a bullet in the brain, but there's no gunshot wound.
Yeah.
He's like, this is very bizarre. So yeah, you're right. They see the scarred organs and then they're like, I mean, how could she have scarred organs that, or she has no stab marks on the outside of her body. It's as if somebody like tore them up and put them back inside of her. And then, your boy Austin looks over and the fridge has blood just pouring out of it.
Well, dripping out. It wasn't like pouring
out. Well, there's a huge pile at the bottom. At the bottom. And he was kind of like, oh, and he runs over and he opens it and there's just like blood everywhere, like inside the fridge, dripping from all the bags of like the, you know, organs and whatnot. And her little vial looked like it had been dripping as well.
I thought it was all the blood that was coming out of the vial. It just went everywhere.
Well, no, because he grabbed that one bag, and that one bag was really drippy too. I don't know, maybe, but
it just dripped on top of it.
Yeah, and Tommy's like, you know, can you get your head in the game? What'd you do? And he's like, can you get your shit together? Pretty much. And Austin's like, I got it. I got to just clean this up. I don't know what happened. So he walks out to go dump the bag of
digging into her Jane Doe's body, I feel like more and more, like layers and layers, like and more and more weird things are happening outside. Totally. Yeah.
So Austin grabs this like messy bag, I think, to go get rid of it. And so he's in the hallway by himself now. And these hallways, they're very long, poorly lit. They're pretty creepy on its own. Again, we said it's kind of a beautiful house, but it's definitely dark and scary. And they've got all the convex mirrors all through like the corners of the hallway, so that I guess
like in hospitals, like so you don't run your the cart into other
the body carts.
Yeah, the body carts.
So he looks up, and when he looks up, he can see down the other hallway,
just around the corner.
Around the corner, that there's a guy standing there, in the middle of the hallway. Yeah, creepy. Yeah. And he looks really fast, and there's nobody there.
Yeah.
Which, where did they go? Yeah. Every movie, you know, you see something, you don't see it again. So you know, of course, you're just gonna keep going on about your business, which he does. And at this point, we flip back, and Tommy's still cutting into her, and as he's looking inside, her rib cage, which he had cut, sliced his wrist open.
On the broken bone.
And he was like, oh, shit. And he runs over to the sink, and he's cleaning himself off. And then we go back to Austin in the hallway, and he's hearing sounds in the ducts again, like the air ducts. And, you know, you're wondering if it's the cat or not, and it is. And unfortunately, baby cat, little Miss Kitty's bloody and dying.
Yeah. It's dying.
We don't know what happened to Little Miss Kitty. Maybe it was a major giant rat. We don't know. But it's pretty sad. And he takes the cat to the dad. And he's like, Dad, look. And you can tell at this point that the cat is definitely the dad's cat. No. And he's like, you know, cuddling it and kind of being sad looking. And all of a sudden he breaks its neck, puts it out of its misery, which is interesting. And again, some foreshadowing too. mercy kill.
Yeah.
So then he walks right to the incinerator room, and Austin's behind him, and he puts the cat in the incinerator, poof, gone. And he tells Austin pretty tersely, he's like, give me some space.
Yeah.
So he walks away. And, so the son went back, Austin went back into the autopsy room. And as soon as he walks in, one of the drawers just starts opening, one of the body drawers on
one of the empty ones on the top.
And
so it's going,
yep,
and opening slowly.
And Tommy walks in and he goes, what are you doing? He goes, nothing. I think maybe I didn't shut this all the way.
Yeah.
It's just, it's fine.
Yeah. And closes it and then he locks it.
Yep, closes and locks it. And then the stereo starts like acting up again. And Tommy says something about like how that stereo has always been a pain in the ass, but it's one of the only things I kept of your mother's. And
Stanley that's was the name of the cat.
Huh?
Stanley was the name of the cat, right?
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh, I missed that. Yeah. Oh. And then that's all the comment he says about the mom. But then Austin goes, yeah, I miss her too. I was like, I don't know if that's what your dad was saying. But so we can tell, like, Tommy's a little bit...
he's guarded about what happened
guarded
to his wife.
And, like, keeping his feelings in. And Austin was kind of trying to pry at this moment. He was trying to take that in. But he wasn't having it. And he kind of walked away quickly, and they start getting back into Jane Doe, physically and figuratively. And is when they find...
They cut into her stomach.
The stomach and the GI tract, and they find this, like, flower. And he goes, "Is that a flower, Dad?" And he goes immediately to his book of flowers, and he starts flipping through.
I've seen this before.
Yeah, I've seen it. Of course you have. Yeah. And he flips open to a thing called Jimson weed. And he again says, "You only can find these up north." He says, this is now the second time he said up north. I'm like, where the fuck are we talking about? Like, North Pole? Like, what are we talking
about? And you use it to what?
For paralysis.
Yeah.
Yep. So it says this flower, like, I guess, I think he said something like, whoever did put this inside of her did this to paralyze her. Then they keep digging through the GI system, and they find a whole piece of cloth, to which Austin goes, this looks like a shroud of some kind.
Opens it up.
And they can't believe that, first of all, it's even intact, because it's gone through her entire GI system, which means it should have disintegrated by now, but it hadn't. And when they open it up, there's inscriptions and a drawing all over it and Roman numerals. It says XXVII, which is what, 27, and
her missing molar
is inside.
Yeah.
So it was like a tooth wrapped up with this shroud or cloth or what have you.
It was a big, like, insignia, like, logo in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Something.
And other Roman numerals or letters on the edges, like, up and down.
That don't seem to fit.
Yeah. They're missing, like, spaces in odd places. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like another puzzle.
It is. And then I think Austin grabs it and kind of puts it next to that long piece of string that was in her mouth. And I think he, you know, is assuming that that piece of string kind of came out of that cloth. In any case, he then, they both are like, it's as if she was being tortured for a ritual. And then we hear the radio, like, chime in as if it's another character. And it's like, weather alert. The storm is so bad. Like, there's one thing for sure. You're not going anywhere. Dun, dun, and it's very ominous, and it's almost like the radio guy is talking directly to them. And I don't know if they're noticing it at this point. I can't remember, but I mean, it's pretty overt.
Austin does.
Okay, Austin does. And then again, because we didn't have to just hear it once. We have to hear it a second time to know some shit's about to happen. But that creepy song starts playing again, and this time you hear a little bit more of the lyrics, and it says, "Open up your heart and let the sun shine in." And this is when they're cutting into her skin a bit more, and they're starting to, and they're so perplexed as to why the whole inside is just so fucked up, but the outside's perfect. And when they start peeling the skin back, it's like, holy shit, there's like written text all on the inside
of her skin. Yeah.
So as they peel it back, it's as if it has some of the same markings as that cloth that we just saw. So what the fuck is going on, man? Who knows?
Yeah. I mean, they peeled that thing back and it's, far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is what I like about this movie. At this point in time, okay, this Austin goes, we need to get up out of here.
No, Tommy says
no,
that.
No. Austin did.
No, the father goes, we need to get the hell out of here.
No.
When the light goes out?
No. At first, Austin was like, Dad, we need to get out of here. And he said something like, we don't finish a job until it's done.
So he says that later.
Yeah.
There's a point where Tommy says
it takes like 20 seconds, literally from this point.
Yeah.
But at first it's like, I just like it because, you know, there's so many movies where some shit starts happening
and, they
and like creepy supernatural and it's like Poltergeist, right? Yeah. It's like one of my favorites. But, you know, I remember my dad always talking about how like when they put Carol Ann on the floor and put the helmet on her and she's like sliding across the floor, they're just laughing and shit. And he's like, I get the fuck up out of that house, you know? Yeah. And so, you know, there's people that in real life we get the fuck up out of this place, and so he's kind of like, Dad, we got to get out of here. And that's when you know, Tommy makes the quick comment of like, we're not leaving until we figure this out. And that's when the lights go out.
Oh, they all, the bulbs explode.
It's
like
all the lights above her body, Jane Doe's body, burst. And this is a cool scene.
Yeah. The lights go out and all you hear are the doors swinging open out of, you know, all the, you know, bodies, the refrigerator doors, and then you hear like naked foot like hitting the ground.
It is a really, really cool scene.
Yeah.
It's pitch black, you can't see a thing, and all you're hearing is sounds.
Yeah,
and
it's like boom, 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 and you're like your footsteps.
Yeah.
Oh, and then you hear, which is funny, we skipped over this. There's a scene when the girlfriend wanted to see the body. She, so one of the body, all the bodies had a little bell tied to their toe, and she goes, what are those for? And she goes, well, back in the day, they didn't, you know, a lot, half the time, people wouldn't be dead. They'd be, you know, like knocked out or whatever it was. And this is the one way to tell, find out if they were dead or not.
Like,
you
hear get the bell up.
You'll hear the bell, yeah, mm-hmm. bell hell ringing. And she goes, well, so then why do you still do
yeah, it?
And he goes, because I'm a traditionalist, which, right? Whatever, you know,
which is what you were trying to say earlier, yeah.
And so, and then you hear these bells. Yeah. Footsteps and bells,
and you hear grappling sounds. And it's like, yeah, you kind of think something's happening to the dad, and you can hear Austin being like, dad, so, what's up, like, where are you?
So the old lady and the guy without a face and then the burn guy,
right? Because we know we got three, crispy three, yeah. Crispy McNugget, we've got the guy without a face.
This is so Austin pulls out his phone. Ugh. and the flashlight comes on. And then you see all the doors are swung open.
And so, to your credit, and at this point, Tommy literally looks at him and he goes, let's get the fuck out of here.
And we all started laughing. That's exactly what
we would say, what should happen in real life. I loved it. And this is when I was like, yes, like, oh, finally. It's like a real, it's like a, this is good. This is, we're in a good place. And so they're running down the hall. And the generator kicks on. Yeah. And he's like, it's the generator. They're hoping that the elevator will work, but it's not.
Of course.
Duh. And so they run up to the office. Yeah, there's a little stair, like a spiral, one of my favorite old like spirally staircases, and they get up to this office that's kind of like a little level above this. It's a loft, yeah. And they
open storm door, but it's,
well, they can't get out of the storm door, yeah.
The sycamore tree has like, remember, it broke off and it's on top of the
door.
Yeah,
he's like, the sycamore tree must have fallen or something with the storm. And so Tommy tries to pick up the phone and make a call. And he calls 911, or he calls the sheriff's department, and he gets a hold of Sheldon. And it's like, I can't hear you. And he's like, Sheldon, listen to me. You got to get out here. And it's like, Tommy, mm-hmm. you there?
Yeah.
And then the phone goes out. When they were running in there, we definitely heard some feet kind of chasing them, and shutting the door, and it's like the sounds are coming. And so at this point, like,
they hear the bell,
a fucking bell, and I was like, oh, gross. So you hear a bell walking, and Austin gets down on his hands and knees
to look under the door.
Locked door.
Yeah.
And he sees, I mean, for real, it's the fucking foot with a, you know, so it's like, we got dead men walking now.
Yeah.
And, you know, he gets up and he's kind of like,
oh shit.
He's like, dad, like, something is bad. And ever since Jane Doe came in here, like, everything's happening. Like, this is not good. And the dad's still a little bit in denial.
Yeah. And then,
and I was like, why wouldn't he say, dude, I just saw a dead walking foot with a bell. Like, he didn't really tell him what he saw.
And then the door gets jiggled, right? The door handle goes, he tries to come in.
Yep.
And so they put the filing cabinet in front of the door.
And at this point, his wrist is now bleeding pretty bad. More, Tommy's wrist is bleeding pretty bad from where he cut it earlier. So
Austin
he
is blocking the door while Tommy
goes to rinse.
And there's a bathroom
with a shower.
Yeah.
Which, of course, if there's a shower, then there's always somebody behind that shower curtain, which the you
curtain
just
door,
know.
Yeah.
So the curtain starts moving, and the where that Austin is standing, Austin can see, again, like a silhouette or a body, and he yells like, and as Tommy's about to pull the shower curtain back, he's like, dad, don't. But when he does it, there's nobody there.
There's no one there.
And when he looks over at Austin to be like, what?
What?
Then all of a sudden it's like, door, he gets attacked by, yeah, the door shuts, but you see
at the
him.
Same time. Yep, yeah.
And there's no body though. So it's like a supernatural force is like pushing him down. And we see him behind the bathroom door getting like fucking beat like, the hell up, like his
throwing
head
around,
getting
thrown around the room.
Uh-huh.
Breaks the glass.
Yep.
I think he sounded like he was getting sliced or
it
something.
It was bad. Yeah. I mean, he had like open tear marks in his shirt and wounds and whatnot. And and then it stops. And
bathroom door opens.
Right at the very, very end, Tommy opens his eyes when he's on his back, and he sees that face in front of him, and he sees those old, dead, cold gray eyes.
Yeah.
So it's when it stops and the door swings open. He goes, I just don't understand it. Like, I saw her eyes, Austin, I saw her gray eyes. And they start talking about, and I think Tommy's like, this is just impossible. And Austin was like, dad, I think we are way beyond impossible right now. Yeah.
And then they hear a crash of the filing cabinet.
Mm-hmm.
And then
the door opens.
and the door opens, and he looks over, and the door's completely
there.
Open now.
Yeah.
The filing cabinet's on the floor.
Yep.
And
nobody's there.
No one's there. Yeah.
So they decide to go back to the autopsy room because why not? And when they go back, they see all of Jane Doe's organs that they had previously taken out. They immediately like rapid decomposition. Yeah. And they were like, it's as if the body was protecting these things. Right. So he goes, let's take her to the crematorium, because I think like they're both on the same wavelength right now. They want to burn this fucking body. Yeah. They don't care how she died. Yeah. They don't care why she died. They want to get rid of it.
Funny scene too. And the door automatically closes and locks. Mm-hmm. Now they can't get out.
But Austin looks out.
No, Austin he breaks and gets an axe. And he starts to hack the door. He's like, I'm getting out of here. So he starts to hack the door and it creates a little opening where he could see out. Mm-hmm. And he looks out and he sees like
and your favorite
smoke, you know, and then all of a sudden.
Jump scare.
The old lady with her eyes all sewn up and the mouth sewn up. She's looking through the other side.
But it was funny because he just like seriously, he was like, man. And he said, fuck this. And he just like slowly backs away so that his dad can just see it for himself.
Yeah.
And Tommy walks up and looks out, and of course when he does, old lady like pulls her mouth lips open so that it's like tears apart. Yeah. And it's pretty gross.
And so Austin's like, screw this.
He says, fuck this. So,
and he gets a flammable liquid and pours it all over Jane Doe. Mm-hmm. Tommy's face was like, yeah, we're doing this right now.
He already has a match in his hands. He's already got it going. So he throws the match on her body. She goes up in flames, and then like and magic, the flames kind of take over.
Yeah.
And it's like
it covers the whole ceiling too.
But it's almost as if it's like taking over on its own path. It takes the camera, which they were like the video camera, which they were recording this whole autopsy, and then it immediately goes over to the chalkboard where they were drawing stuff about her, and then it goes over to the pinboard where they had all the Polaroids about her.
Yep.
And all of those things are on fire. Austin grabs a fire extinguisher, puts everything out. Her face is like glowing fiery.
It was burning at one point.
But guess what?
Yeah.
Her body?
It was not completely.
Perfectly pale.
Yeah.
Pristine.
Yeah.
They
put the fire out, and now, like everything else that the fire touched was burnt.
Yep.
Except her body. It was completely fine.
Which is fucking nuts. And so they were like, run. And they just start running. They were like, this is some shit. Like, okay, we can't burn her. All right. So they start running and they're trying to get to the elevator. And we hear another fucking dead body with a toe ringer following them. And they're trying so hard and they're panicking. And it's like, oh, my God.
They're trying to open the elevator door. Right. And they open it and try to close it. And this body is getting closer and closer. And we see that.
And you see it too. Like every time like a light kind of flickers, you see a little bit of his face and his
getting
head.
Getting closer and closer.
And it's creepy.
And who is it? It's.
Well, and hold on. So, and don't forget, like, you know, Austin had the axe when he opened up the door earlier. So he had handed his father the axe. And
I just meant, like, who's that guy walking up to them?
The gunshot victim?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the gunshot victim.
No face guy.
So he...
Which they flash for a second, by the way.
Like three times. Yeah. You get to see it, like, when the lights are flickering.
Even up close.
It was good. Yeah. And so they have a little teeny crack where the doors won't shut all the way. And so Austin's hiding in the back of the elevator and Tommy's just kind of like standing right at the front, like waiting to get guy with no face. And as soon as guy with no face walks up, he just swings the axe straight out of the little thing. And then he kind of is like freaked out and he pulls back, drops the axe, and Austin goes and looks out. And what the fuck? We see Emma.
Yeah.
Not man with no face.
He hacked Emma.
So right now we've got a perplexing situation. Not only do we have a body that we cannot burn that has all this weird shit inside of it, now we got some weird like switcheroo trickery happening. And
Austin
we don't know why.
Is like crying.
Austin really freaks out.
Tommy is taking the blame.
And they're stuck in the elevator, like really lamenting about this bad situation at this point. And this is when Tommy starts really going on about his wife.
We get a glimpse of what could have happened to her.
I think it's safe to say she committed suicide from depression.
Yeah.
And he's really going on about how, you know.
And it was like, a really, really touching and sad scene. The scene was awesome because it was delivered well by Brian Cox and Amir Hirsch.
Yeah.
Good actors.
So he's like, you know, it was like years of mistakes, and you know, like she was living with it alone, and it was my mistakes. It was a little nonsensical.
But didn't you say something about and then she sent it to you, or what did he say about him? He said, "Now you've been."
You had to pay for these mistakes. He was like, all these mistakes, and now you have to pay for them.
Yeah.
Which is also a little weird.
What was it about? Okay.
Yeah. But you know, I mean, when your parents have depression, when your parents are going through something hard, children do as well, right? So I don't know if that's kind of the statement that he was making. But again, it was a rough moment, and it was an interesting moment to all of a sudden start talking about this when he just fucking murdered his girlfriend. Like, I kind of also don't get the connection here.
And Austin says, you know what? We have to go find out what the fuck is going on.
Is this also, pardon the interruption, is this where he says, I used to call her Ray, as in Ray of Sunshine?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Now, if you remember, the song that keeps playing is like, open your heart and let the sun shine in. So that's a little interesting connection. What he was saying
about that was like, I called her Ray because she was a ray of sunshine. Mm-hmm. And yet, because she was such a happy person, you know, but then I didn't realize that she was holding on to this demon, this pain inside of her that she would not show to anyone else. She just kept it.
Right.
And then, you know, and this depression took over her, and she committed suicide. And that's what he meant by, you know, ray of sunshine and all that.
Right. Yeah. Which, I'm not going to read all the lyrics, but that song, I did go pull them up, and it's like, it's all about if you're dark inside, the devil gets you.
Yeah.
So, anyway, so what now?
So Austin says, okay, the only way to get ourselves out of this is find out what the heck is going on. So this is like, his father doesn't really care about why they died.
So now they have to figure out why.
But you're right. And Austin's like, why?
We have to find out why. At every turn that we took, Jane Doe was trying to make sure that we wouldn't figure this out. Yeah. And so we have to go figure it out. Yeah.
So they go back into the room.
And the crematorium, as soon as they're saying this, I mean, again, this is where I'm saying, like, something is alive. Something is against them. It's like, as they're saying this, we're seeing smoke and ash coming out of the crematorium.
But it's like, to stop them from getting back to the autopsy room. It's not like the house was doing that.
Yeah. I mean, it was happening. Yeah. And so again.
As they gather themselves up to come out of the elevator to go walk back to the autopsy room.
It's so smoky.
The crematorium. Turns on, opens up, all the smoke comes out of there and fills up the hallway.
Right.
So now they have to walk through the hallway.
Right.
In the smoke.
And so as I said, it's like another thing that's keeping them from her. So
as they're going to her.
And again, it was another cool scene. It was almost as cool as like when everything goes pitch black. It was like, didn't feel like a hallway anymore. Yeah. It felt like just a whole area of like you cannot see through.
They're walking through.
They're lost.
They're coughing.
Yeah.
Walking through. And he says, It says, Austin, keep going. I'm right behind you. Don't worry. I'm right behind you. And then all of a sudden, he feels someone walking opposite between them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Passes
and he's
by.
Like, passes by them. And he's like, what? And he turns around.
And the dad just starts getting attacked.
Well, he sees a face.
Right.
He turns around and he sees a face. And then the dad starts to get attacked.
Cut up, at this point, he's getting cut.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they just keep going. So he gets up. He's like, I'm okay. Let's keep moving. He's bleeding. They get into the room. And so then they just immediately go in and start peeling her scalp back. It's like, okay, we got to get to the brain now. So they peel back her scalp. They take a little brain chunk. They put it under their microscope. And he's like, oh, my God, Dad, come and look. And it's the brain is still alive. And so basically Tommy goes, the reason why we can't figure out why she died or how she died is because she's not dead. And
how's that possible?
And so at this point, you know, Austin is running back over to the cloth, and he folds it in half. And when he folds it in half, all those little letters that seem to be scattered, you can read through it. And basically, when you fold it the right way, it spells the word Leviticus. Which so then Tommy runs open because he's like the book knower of all things. And he opens up the Bible and he goes to, I think, the Roman numerals, you know, leads him to reading a point where we're talking about the 17th century. And it says something about, what is it? Like if girls want to consult with the, or if like if young women consult with the dead, then I don't remember something or other. Anyway, so immediately Tommy starts putting together this whole story. And this is probably in the only part of the movie where I'm like, okay, you just got to this like in 27 seconds. Okay, he goes in the 17th century in New England, which I guess this is what he kept meaning by north.
Well, one of them figured out what it was, right? Because he says, even before he finishes, he goes, this is a witch, right?
Well, I'm getting to that. That's what he's saying. He's like, he goes, Leviticus, women talking to dead. Oh my gosh. And that's when Tommy goes, 17th century, New England. You know, there was these rituals. And that's when Austin goes, is she a witch? And then Tommy goes, witches aren't real though. And he goes, what happened was it was a bunch of young girls that were just, you know, being called witches and they were pointing each other out, but there's no such thing as witches. So he's still like, okay, I know what's happening, I think, but that didn't exist. And so they're like, Tommy's the one that says, what if, oh my gosh, but all these rituals were performed on this poor girl's body. So he starts to have empathy for her.
Yeah, but that part was a leap. That's
what I'm saying. Yeah. This is like, oh, really? Like they're just trying to wrap up the story or something.
Yeah, I mean, I liked everything to the point where it's like, oh, she could be a witch.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Or she is one and she's doing all this.
So they try to take it.
And I'll buy all that. But
sure.
But then he says, no, she can't be.
She can't be because they weren't real.
And then goes, oh, maybe these rituals turned her into a witch.
Right.
And it's just like, what?
Right. So he's like
leave it be like that she's a witch.
I guess.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's the thing because in real history, there was no such thing as witches. We knew that. And so he's saying like, okay, we took an innocent girl and we did the very, we turned her into the very thing we were trying to destroy. And here we are cutting her open and still torturing her. And so maybe she is now. Therefore, some type of witch, I guess. And
he was also saying she's still suffering.
She can feel all of this. She can
feel all of it. Which, again, like, what? Or speculation?
I know. It's totally weird. Yeah. I mean, this is the weak part of the movie, no joke. I mean, I liked where it was going. And this is what I was saying earlier. The fucking, 2 seconds in, as soon as they started autopsying her, that's a word, I was like, she's a witch. And so, whatever. Doesn't matter. Credit.
You want a cookie?
Yeah, I want a cookie. So anyway, it's like that's when and he goes, that's why she's keeping us alive. She wants us to feel it and it won't stop until.
And then all of a sudden, and then the door starts to of that room like someone's trying to get in.
Yeah. And so then Tommy runs over to her. Now, and the interesting thing to note, by the way, is that
Austin is holding the door closed.
Tommy's the only one who's being attacked. Like Austin's never been hurt at all.
Yeah.
And so he's like, she wants us to feel it, which I was like, she wants us to feel it or she wants me to feel it? Because Tommy's the only one feeling it.
Yeah.
So he runs over to her while Austin's holding the door and he says to her in her face, he like leans over to her very close and he says very, very sweetly, like, I won't fight you on this. Just don't hurt him, meaning Austin. And all of a sudden, immediately his body starts, I wrote like reverse dying, meaning everything that we have now walked through and found with her body, her broken wrists, her broken ankles, it's happening to him. And the second but it happens turn, to him, it reverses on her.
Yeah.
So he starts like coughing and his lungs are obviously like getting burned up and
smoke coming out of his mouth. Yeah.
His eyes go gray. Hers come to color.
Wrists and ankles break.
Yep.
But hers comes together.
So basically he is now feeling everything that she has felt. And, now I'm waiting for her to sit up and walk away, but she never does, right? And
jump on a broom and like fly away.
And so remember when I said earlier, like the cat thing was a mercy kill and foreshadowing. The dad is in such pain and suffering, and he says to Austin, Austin's like freaking out over his body, and he's like, "What do I do, Dad?" And he's like, "Please, just let me go." And he takes a scalpel and he hands it to Austin. Austin stabs him right where he knows to stab him to put him out of his misery. And
he doesn't really reach for the scalpel just because he can't grab it.
It was like in his hand. So he was like,
no, he was like trying to like point at it with his whatever. Okay. And then,
so the lights come on and the radio comes on and we think it's kind of all done. And Austin hears a crew trying to get in, because as we said, the sycamore tree was covering the doors that are basically like the the storm doors, you know, whatever.
So he goes to the storm door,
and he hears this whole crew, and he hears like a truck, and it's like, hey, can you open the door? You know, from the outside, we hear this, and Austin's like crying, he's got tears streaming down his face, he's like, I can't get it, and he's trying,
it's stuck,
I can't get it, and the guy's like, open the doors, and he's like, I can't, and he's like freaking out, and all of a sudden it's like, open your heart and let the sun shine in, and I'm like, what the fuck?
It's the same,
voice. And it was this man's voice, oh my God, that was like the kicker of the whole thing. I was like, what?
It was like a night. It was like a
total
really,
nightmare.
Yeah, it was a really good example of what a nightmare would be.
Oh, like, my God. Disgusting. Yeah. So he fucking can't. And all of a sudden, he like hears something or feels something
turns
behind
around.
Him.
No, he hears the bell.
Oh, yeah,
turns
bell.
Around.
And it's his dad.
He turns around the loft, looks down. There's nothing. And then when he turns back, it's his dad.
Okay, whatever. So he sees his dad. He falls down.
That scares him.
And then he dies.
Yeah, it breaks.
He literally dies. So that fucking bitch just lied to... Jane Doe just lied to Tommy in his face with her, you know, gray eyes.
Can never trust a witch.
Don't trust a witch.
Yeah.
And so both of our dad and son are dead now, for real, though.
So it's next day, right?
So I have songs in a big circle. So the song starts playing like majorly. And so the next day, the cops are there. It's a bright, bright, sunny, sunshiny day. And the female cop says to Sheriff Sheldon, it looks like he... And Sheriff Sheldon's like, look, I've known this family for years. Whatever it looks like it is, I don't believe it.
Yeah.
And he's like, something's wrong here. And then they walk over to Jane.
What the fuck happened here?
Yeah, what the fuck is going on? Like, how is this the second family that died in two days with this dead girl?
And
like,
exact same sort of way.
Right, totally. And brutal deaths, you know, it's terrible. And because the scalpel's still like sticking in Tommy's chest and, you know, whatever. The one thing we didn't see is them finding Emma's body, which I don't know why we didn't see them find her, but I think it is part of, I don't know, it might be part of the story.
I said that, and you said they passed over her body.
Oh, no, what I was saying is like when Austin was walking down the hallway, he stepped over her.
Oh,
again. That's all I know.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
They walk over to Jane Doe, and
so
look. Nothing is wrong with her now. Like, so everything was reversed. There's no scalpel incisions anymore. Her chest is totally back together.
Fine.
Everything is pristine.
Just like how they brought her.
Yeah. And the female police officer goes, what do you want to do with this body? And he's like, get it out of my county. Take to VCU. And that's literally the last words of the movie, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
They put the body. So they put Jane Doe's body on a truck.
Yep.
And a guy's driving it, and he's trying to listen to his music, and all of a sudden the music...
He's on the phone, too.
He's talking to someone. And I think it's his girlfriend or something. He's like,
hey, baby.
And then the music that he's playing changes to that fucking song again.
Yeah.
And the camera pans all the way back down the truck, and we see her toe wiggle.
Well, you hear ding, ding, ding.
And there's no bell there.
There's no
but
bell, yeah.
It's just so you know.
And then you
she's still there.
Yeah. And then it goes dark.
It
was good. I liked... I mean, there were some... You know, it's not perfect. There were some, you know, obviously we were complaining about certain things, certain parts of the characters, motivation.
Yeah.
But overall, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I did
liked
too.
It a lot.
I did too.
Yeah.
It was fun. I mean, you know, the mythology part, it had holes in it. I feel like witches were the thing this year,
and
I guess.
Something they could have, like, cleaned up. Like, they didn't have to explain. We already bought in. Like, okay, she's a witch.
Uh-huh.
That's fine. You don't have to say, well, there weren't any witches.
Yeah.
It's okay. Like, well, you don't have to say that. So those little things.
Yeah, because why would he have just jumped to whatever? Now, so here's the thing. So as soon as we hit stop and we ran up here to do this, it's like we've been thinking about, like, what the fuck this movie meant. And obviously you got this whole, like, underlying thing about depression, you know, the wife or the mother had depression and maybe she committed suicide or something, and it's like he didn't really get it, or when he did get it, it was too late or what have you. And so it was interesting that Tommy was the one to be like, they did torture this poor innocent young girl and now we're doing the same thing. And it's like all of a sudden he becomes so empathetic and understanding, and he feels so bad for this person who was hurting inside. I don't know. It just seems so... It was interesting that Tommy's character was the one to put that together, I guess. Like, I think it was necessary to this, to the writers of the story, to have him have this epiphany that the witch
suffering. Was a metaphor for a depression.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, there's
that's clear, a stretch, right?
There was, I mean, clearly something going on where there's another family that had just died earlier in the movie. It wasn't just them, right? Like, this didn't just happen in the morgue.
Yeah.
Like, this has happened before. So I'm not saying
the day before.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that if this story only happened in the morgue or the crematorium, I could very easily see that all of this was like just a metaphor for depression, and like that her body was so pristine and perfect on the outside, but everything on the inside was, dead, and you know decayed and what have you, and that could totally be a metaphor for how depression is. You know, like someone looks fine on the outside, and as he said, his wife was like a ray of sunshine to him. But I don't know. At the same point, like, I guess in what you're kind of saying is like, was she really just a fucking witch?
Yeah.
Like, was she just a witch? Like, killing these families, and like, she's just evil.
I think that's a better ending.
Yeah.
Than to say, oh, you know, nothing happened and Emile Hirsch went crazy.
Yeah.
Right?
Was it Emile Hirsch that went crazy, or was it Tommy the whole time? And that's the other thing. Like,
because it's Tommy with a knife in him. So from the cop's point of view, mm-hmm. it's Emile Hirsch. Austin did it, right?
Yeah. So, and like, then, you could take the angle of there were two comments about how the mother's death and then him having to like take care of his dad is like fucking Austin up, right? So you could take it where
depression, can that be passed down to the son, or I mean, that just offspring?
I mean, I think they do believe it's hereditary.
I mean, so if that's the case, then it'll be Austin that carries that, right, from his mom.
Yeah. Well, and I'm not even saying that he, I mean, yes,
but,
he has.
But that's.
I just mean, like, the weight of everything. Yeah. Has
I think
now,
it's crass to say, oh, depression does this to other people as well. Like, they become murderers. And, you know what I mean? Like, that's insensitive.
Sure. I'm saying they made a point to have the girlfriend say, you need to kind of get away from this. Like, why didn't you tell him you're leaving yet? And he's like, I have to stay, you know, and like, he's in a friggin' morgue. And he even said, I don't, when I think about myself and my future, I don't see myself as Austin the mortician. Like, I know I need to go. Like, I need to get out of here, but I'm doing this for my dad, right? And then later when Tommy says to him, you know, very lovingly in the elevator, that all these mistakes have led up to being your issue or your problem, I don't know. I mean, they went through length. You know, they went to lengths to make us feel like Austin's kind of gotten the shaft. Or the stick, right?
The father feels guilty because, you know, that he has to, like, take this mantle, like, maybe he doesn't want. Mm-hmm. And he sees that. But it has the depression thing, mm-hmm. like, the thing that you read on the forum, like, before we started recording, I just don't buy it. It's too cheap. And to say that this didn't happen, it's all a metaphor for depression.
I don't agree with that at all. Like, what I'm saying is, did Austin go crazy, or did the dad go crazy because of his depression, or what have you? If we're already saying like the mother,
so you're saying that's what I'm saying.
That is different than one of the theories of like none of this actually happened.
Both theories. One, that it didn't happen.
Yeah.
Right. That's I don't believe that.
No, I don't either.
Yeah, it's too cheap. And to say like, oh, you know, Austin or Tommy went crazy because the depression, that's even worse. I don't even like that either.
Clearly, it's a big theme in this movie. I mean, the song itself is all about like letting the devil in if you have a dark, gloomy heart. I mean, literally, that's what the song's about.
I get it, but I just don't think that's a hard correlation. I think it's so loose coincidence. That's an accident, right? I don't think it's a deliberate connection that the writers wrote. Because if they did, I think that was very insensitive on their part.
I don't know.
I mean,
I wouldn't say so. I think we watched another movie where, you know, his, you know, they look like people. I mean, where his...
Depressed people don't hurt. They might hurt themselves. Like, I don't know. Maybe I'm speaking on things I don't know a lot about.
Yeah.
It just I just don't think like, oh, they become monsters and they kill them. It's not. It's just not.
No, but he definitely could. You could definitely have a situation where he felt like he couldn't get out of and a situation or the world was weighing on him, and that's that.
And who knows? That one scene with the toe wiggling at the end, that throws all those theories out the window.
No.
Right? Yeah.
Maybe she's a catalyst for something like this. You know, you just don't know. Like, maybe she is. Maybe she's the devil where gloomy
depression
people.
Depression monster? No, don't.
What the fuck? Why is that not implausible? Look, if the song is saying like doom and gloom, if you have that in your heart, the devil can come in. Maybe she's the devil. I mean, they did say earlier, like with that Leviticus
I buy that.
Script,
I buy the devil thing.
Like,
yeah.
What did they say? They said something like, if a girl consults with the dead, like some, or she's a devil. I don't know. They talked about demons. They talked about devils. You know, so maybe that's what it means. Maybe she is this like vessel that kind of comes in and preys on your darkness inside. I don't know. Could be. We don't know.
It's a good movie.
Clearly, they leave it up to our interpretation.
And that causes conversation, which is a good movie. Yeah.
And maybe she's just a witch from the 17th century, but I think it's really fascinating that never once did she move. Never once did she talk. She didn't. She literally didn't actually lift a finger the whole movie. She wiggled a toe, and that was about it. So,
it's a really interesting take on like a witch story, right?
Sure. Which nobody knows it's a witch story when you walk into it, so that's kind of interesting too. That was the surprise.
Yeah.
So it was fun. You should check it out. Yeah. But we just told you the whole thing, so you might not need to.
No, but I mean, actually. We're running over a little over time, so why don't we go to our
whose time story? Are we running over? I ain't got nowhere to go.
Oh,
if y'all are still listening, we're gonna do our first horror experience.
So Mark B. wrote in
from Charlotte, North Carolina. Thank you, Mark, for writing in. Again, if you want to write in, it's onefinalscare@gmail.com. And so Mark's subject of first horror movie experience says, I was 12 years old in 1982.
Oh, man, that was a long time ago.
A friend of mine was having a birthday party and invited us to go to a movie. We were supposed to see one of the Disney Witch Mountain movies. Who likes that? But instead, one of the kids in the group said, let's go see this scary movie instead. It was Poltergeist. Yes, I mentioned that earlier. I love it. I had never seen a horror movie. In fact, this was my first non-G-rated movie ever. Way to jump in there, Mark.
12?
What?
It's a late start.
A late start. Yeah, Tracy started at 4. It's okay. The scariest thing I remember before this was the wildfire scene in Bambi. That's so sweet. That's a sad scene. Poltergeist was a whole other level. I distinctly remember the scene where the guy starts ripping his face apart in the mirror. Yes. I remember being completely disgusted and horrified by that scene. It haunted me for months. Mark, that is a good scene.
Yeah.
I'm glad it haunted you for months, and I'm glad you're listening to the podcast, and I'm glad you still watch horror movies today.
Thanks for writing in, Mark B.
Yes, thank you, and thanks, you guys, for listening. We really appreciate it. We're having fun doing this. We hope you are, too.
Yep. So this is Minky.
And this is Tracy. Peace out.
Bye.